When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on This Morning with Dan Barron, Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
I want to focus our conversation in today on the rising cost of construction, commercial real estate construction in Chicago. Saw a report that the cost index is up by 5.3% year over year from April of 2020 to April 2021. And that's kind of high compared to some other major cities. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, Steve, it's a little difficult to tell right now, but I think, you know, just on the surface, I would say just where Chicago is located geographically. And I think, you know, the business, the building prices, material prices on the West Coast will probably be a little more inexpensive, seeing those reports coming from Asia. And anything that gets to Chicago is usually on a rail or a truck or on an airplane, and there's costs involved with that. I mean, we had some supply disruptions, obviously, last year and into this year as well, which are, you know, increasing prices for all the materials that are coming from either overseas or the coast or different parts of the country. So that supply chain, you know, breakdown or delay is adding to the price of all the building materials. And it's going to continue, I think, for you know, at least through the rest of the year. This year is my guess. Maybe not the increase in the raw material or the price of the raw material. I think, you know, if I'm a builder now and I bought lumber for a project that's ready to start now, I bought that lumber, call it 6 months ago. And 6 months ago, or maybe 3 months ago, that was when these prices were at essentially all-time highs. So these suppliers still have to clear through all of that expensive supply that they're going to be getting delivered. And, you know, depending on who the buyer is or the end user, they may not have the, you know, the relationship with that supplier that's going to, you know, the supplier's going to say, hey, I'll give you what the price is now. That supplier is giving them the price of what they paid for it 6 months ago. I think until they maybe roll through that expensive inventory, that's when the price reduction will start to trickle down to consumers. And certainly, I think single family home users will probably be the last ones to see that price decrease, just because of the buying power that commercial developers are, you know, will. The buying power that they'd have in comparison to, you know, me or you building a house or an apartment building on our own.
Yeah. Just by comparison, I wanted to give some of these other numbers so people can get a sense of where we stand. I mentioned Chicago was at 5.33. New York is at 6.39. D.C. is at 5.88. But places like Denver and Seattle are below 2.5%. So there is a difference there. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how this all shakes out in the end. Is it going to make projects more expensive in the short or long term? And does the rising number of these COVID cases again, is this going to keep impacting the supply chain so that this problem persists?
Well, I think the near term, the costs will persist. They'll continue to be high. Long term, I think it'll eventually normalize. It'll stabilize. The prices will come back down to a normalized level. You know, as it relates to around the country, you know, I would assume I'm somewhat surprised to hear that, you know, the increases on the West Coast are a little lower than Chicago. I think those are kind of booming parts of the country now, with the remote work being maybe something that's permanent or at least semi-permanent. A lot of people are moving. They're leaving, you know, larger cities and you know, going to areas that are more desirable. Colorado, the West Coast, Seattle, places like that are experiencing huge influxes of a population. And I think, you know, those prices with the increased demand for living space, workspace, things like that, those prices will start to jump in those areas. But prices like Chicago and New York, it's just the cost of doing business. Land is more expensive in bigger cities, and building materials are more expensive just because the developers are competing with other developers to win these deals. And, you know, they're going to have to pay up for prime locations and, you know, the building materials and the costs that go along with those locations.
Let's talk a little bit about the ongoing impact COVID is having on the commercial real estate market in the Chicago area. I want to talk a little bit about those who are doing better and those who are not. Some of the delinquency rates have gone down for some, but not for others. So it really is a story of the haves and have-nots, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there are certain asset classes that are doing better than others. I think everyone's heard the term long COVID, you know, the lingering effects COVID has on people. I would think retail, office, hospitality, those are kind of the commercial real estate asset classes, I think, that are suffering from long COVID. Their future is uncertain. No one knows what's going to happen with the return to office. Hotels are a huge question mark right now because no one knows when business travel is going to resume or when leisure travel really is going to, increase. Business travel, I hear, is starting to pick up. My wife is going on her first business-related trip next week. So, you know, I think it's an encouraging sign. But like you said, now we have this Delta variant that, you know, threatens to essentially put the brakes on business travel again or return to office. So, you know, the hospitality and office sector really can't catch a break. And I think it's kind of evident now where, you know, you probably read or other people read that Related came out and said they're going to require all their employees be vaccinated by the end of this month or they're going to be fired. And I really think a lot more employers are going to start to implement that. There's just too many variables. And, you know, people can claim to be as productive as they want to be being remote. But, you know, some organizations really do thrive and thrive best with people all in one location, all under one roof. And I think that's going to be one, how the country gets out of this pandemic by employers starting to force employees to be vaccinated. And two, how the commercial real estate market and just the general economy really sees an improvement, because right now there's just too many question marks. People don't want to go out to restaurants to go eat, or they don't want to go back to the office because, you know, they may be nervous that one of their coworkers is not vaccinated. And if an employer requires that vaccine, and people can go back to work with confidence that they're not going to get sick and they're not going to bring it home to their family. They can go out to dinner and they're not going to catch COVID from a waiter, bartender, server at a restaurant, or even another patron at a restaurant. So I think that's where this is going to kind of lead to is employer mandated vaccines or face termination. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that's got to be the situation, but with the availability of the vaccine now and, you know, how the vaccine can mutate, that's just going to have to be the where I think employers and the country need to go.
The Chicago area delinquency rate on the key category of debt for that sector, the commercial mortgage-backed securities, CMBS, fell to 11.2% in May. And one of the highlights, or lowlights, I guess, is a better way to describe it, is the hotel industry. A number of Chicago hotels have high delinquency rates. Some of them include the W, Chicago City Center, the Marriott, Chicago River, Hilton, Orrington, Evanston. We knew these hotels were having problems. Some of them will survive and some of them will not. Is that your prediction?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's some encouraging signs. I mean, yesterday, Cranes had a report out that the Thompson Hotel on the Gold Coast just sold for a little more than the debt that the owners had on the property. I think in the article they mentioned that the owners had the chance to refinance the property twice since they purchased and renovated the hotel. So they probably had a chance to cash out. And the positive of these CMBS deals, I guess you'd call it positive or negative. These are non-recourse loans. So, you know, one of the big hotels foreclosure suits earlier this year that generated a lot of headlines was the Palmer House. They had the same thing. The Palmer House owners, I think they refinanced twice in the last couple of years. If you remember back to 2017, 18, 2019, the market for hotel financing was very liquid. Owners were able to go out, refinance their properties. In most cases, I would assume, pull their cash out and also go non-recourse. So unfortunately for some of these banks or servicers on these CMBS debt, they're probably going to get some keys handed back to them. And they're the ones that are going to have to figure out how to go about remedying that situation. I think you have to worry really about the people who are really got caught in COVID in a downturn and how maybe they weren't able to cash out and they're still on personal recourse. Those are the properties that are going to those lenders will probably be a little more willing to work with them to figure out solutions and just hopefully get through and to a point where the market's recovered and business and leisure travel is back and these hotels can remain afloat.
Yeah, it feels a little disappointing because after the last couple of months, it kind of felt like we were getting back to normal. I know we have our studios here downtown and, you know, hotels were hopping again. People were coming in. There were lots of visitors coming in. And now to have these cases go back up and that be threatened feels a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, completely agree. It's odd. There's so many different situations here. I mean, you have, the hotel or the restaurants that want to open back up, but they don't have the staff to accommodate a full dining room. So, I think it really comes down to the vaccines and people getting vaccinated for these projects and properties to really in the economy to return to a normal state.
Dan, let's talk a little bit about some of the work that you do and how you do it. I saw this interesting story about how commercial real estate lenders compete not over just low rates and terms of loans. There are some other things at play here that maybe we don't normally see that sort of is driving your business these days. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of competition now. I think a lot of lending institutions sat on the sidelines in 2020. Luckily, we honored all of our term sheets. We closed our deals last year during the pandemic. But, now that people saw there wasn't a huge catastrophe in the commercial real estate market, lenders are back in and there's a lot of competition. Competition out there. And really to win deals, you really need to compete on, every business point. I mean, you want to compete on the lowest rate. You want to have the highest proceeds, lowest fees, longest terms. You know, you want to go as light on covenants as you can and still win these deals. So there's probably 8 or 10 different categories where if you want to be competitive on winning a deal, you really need to be either best or among the best for a developer to say, I'm going to take your deal. Just because there is so much competition out there, there are different, what it was a couple of years ago, maybe even 2 or 3 years ago, it was, debt funds were a huge issue. Traditional bank lenders are usually the, primary source for construction lending. But debt funds were coming out there that don't have the regulation and aren't regulated by, the government. So they can be more aggressive. Obviously their rates are much more expensive, but there's a trade-off. If I'm a developer, would I rather go to 80% of my cost or 90% of cost, to build a building, or would I go to a bank and get 75%, but that debt fund's going to charge me, probably 300 basis points more than a bank will. So there's a trade-off, and I think it's healthy to have competition, obviously, especially for developers, but it's certainly not easy to win deals. I think a relationship with lender or with, your borrowers go a long way. And that's really what I try to hang my hat on is try to be the best lender. So if I don't have the best terms in every category, I'm still able to win some deals because, I have kind of the best interest of my client in mind, as well as credit quality for the bank.
Yeah, the lenders who have traditionally stayed in one of the lanes that you talked about have now started merging into other lanes. That's how you survive, right?
Absolutely. Something along the lines of like life insurance companies, where before, like I said before, banks were traditionally the source of debt for construction. Now life insurance companies are saying, hey, we're sick of just refinancing, paying off these construction loans and holding these deals long term. Now they're getting into financing construction as well. I had a deal refinanced this year, and HUD was the construction lender for an apartment project. Obviously there's a lot more hurdles to get over for a deal like HUD, but the benefits are absolutely there. I mean, you're talking about a 40-year loan term fully amortizing, and that's something that developers have a hard time passing up. So, you know, the competition is always going to come and go. But I think consistency is going to what's going to, you know, really win the day and be kind of a long-term success for any kind of lender.
Dan, how can people get a hold of you and talk a little bit about that consistency one-on-one?
Thanks, Steve. Everyone can call my cell phone, 312. I'm sorry. They call my office phone, 312-544-4657, or email daniel.barons@associatedbank.com.
All right, Dan, great conversation. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.